We're going to our resident technology expert, a man who's been given lots of work to do by me, Phil Davier. Now, look, we are going to try and help you because we're going to answer some questions, some of the most frequently asked questions as regards your computer, your smartphone. Where is technology going? What might we look forward to? I have lots of questions, but you may well have some of your own. And if you do, I expect you to pick up the phone and give us a call. 020-722-42000. Help is here. Help is at hand.
Where?
With you. That's your job, mate. If you don't do it, we'll take you, hold you upside down and throw you out of the window. So, Phil, welcome. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Eddie. How are you, sir?
I'm good. This is a weird day you've come in. It's half past 12 on the 7th of July, the anniversary of the bombings. It's a sad time. We've been talking about a happy time of the Olympics. Of course, this is a sad time. And at that day, I don't know how much you remember about it or how old you were, but I remember driving into work and many people were trying to get through on their mobile phones. But because I think the authorities didn't quite know what was going on, they blocked the mobile phones. So lots of people were unable to use them. First of all, do you think it would be a good idea to put blocks on mobile phones in places like cinemas? I know they do it in other countries. Are there places where you find mobile phones intrusive?
Well, I think it's fair enough if people don't like mobile phones going off when you've paid to go and watch a film, so it's only reasonable, I suppose one might argue. Also, I think that when you go to, say, for example, one of our very own studios here, it drives me mad when even our very own colleagues' phones can go off when you're in the middle of a live show. And I think that's a little bit peculiar. But no, I don't think blocking them, I think that's a bit much.
Okay, fine. Just thought I'd get a view from you on that. So, look, let's talk about what was in the Metro today. Let's start with current news. I am encouraging people to call in, text in, email in if they like. Anything to do with your mobile, something to do with your computer. If you want to ask us, there is no such thing as a stupid question, honestly. And if there is, I've already asked him. Phil Davis here to help us. What was the story in a Metro today, Phil?
Okay, well, some might have been a little bit perplexed by a headline in the Metro that read, and I certainly was, "Internet users could be forced offline by virus." If I may continue with the first couple of paragraphs, hundreds of thousands of internet users could be forced offline on Monday for failing to clean up their computers. They are among 277,000 people whose computers could be controlled by hackers using malware software installed in a viral attack more than a year ago, the FBI has warned.
Okay, viral attacks. I've been getting a number of messages with no content, no message, and I've just not been opening them. How best do we protect our computers?
Well, there are several questions that people pose at me when it comes to virus protection, and I suppose the first one has got to be, which one do I go for? Because purchasing virus software now is ever more becoming like purchasing a new car, yeah, because there are so many out there. What do you go for? What do you do? And I'm not here to tell you which is the best, because I'm impartial, but I think there are ways that you can judge for yourself.
Which is best for you?
Exactly. There are a number of companies, and they have different features. That is the key thing. The different virus programs, depending on the different levels of protection you have, determine what features they have. So if I give you a couple of examples.
Give me a couple, please, yes.
Email scanners is one of the most popular ones, and pretty much all virus programs will have this, because emails pose the biggest viral threat to computers.
They get into your address book, don't they, and do funny things?
Absolutely. That's spamming, we're talking about, when they get into the address book. But as far as viral attacks are concerned, it's an email that has been sent to you, a rogue email at that, that looks like it could have come from someone you know. But there are key things to look out for, and we'll go into that in a minute. But email scanning is one thing that most virus companies, virus programs, will have. Very key point. Real-time scanners is another feature. Real-time scanners are processes, scanners, programs, virus protection, whatever you want to call them, that sit in the background. You might be completely unaware of this. They'll sit in the background and they will check practically everything you do on your computer. It's not a bad thing. It's just making sure that your computer is behaving itself. Probably more importantly, that you're behaving yourself as well. But those features are quite memory hungry. So don't be surprised if you do go for a virus program with that feature and your computer starts to slow down, because it's checking everything. It's in essence doing two things at once, so it will go a little bit slower. Link scanners is another feature. This is when you do a search using your chosen search engine, and the suggestions that come up have, sometimes they have a little green tick next to them if you have a link scanner. It's checking to make sure that what you're going to click on is not going to infect your computer.
Fine.
So that is what a link scanner is. File scanners, pretty self-explanatory. That's the bog standard virus scan. That means that it will go through your computer, make sure you haven't got any viruses on there. Again, pretty much all virus programs have that, or else what's the point of them? And firewalls is the final thing. We've all heard of firewalls. Do we really know what a firewall does? Probably not, but to give you a brief rundown, firewall is normally software-based. It is not normally hardware, which is what a lot of people get very confused about. They do believe it's hardware. Predominantly software-based, which means that the computer is protected against anyone hacking into it. So this means any unwanted connections from people who potentially want to hack into your computer to look at your data, to look at what you do, to maybe even control the computer.
And that would come quite often through unsecured Wi-Fi or something like that. This is a way of accessing other people's computers, isn't it?
Yes, it could do. Unsecured Wi-Fi is certainly one way and probably the easiest way, but I suppose a simple password on your wireless connection would sort that problem. However, it doesn't mean to say that if someone is determined enough that they won't get into your computer eventually. But I feel it's important, before we have a load of people panicking over this, that it is highly unlikely, because people who hack normally want to look at companies as a whole and somewhere where they're going to get the most out of their one hit. So, for example, a bank is probably slightly more at threat of hackers than a home computer is.
Do we know what happened with the Royal Bank of Scotland?
Well, when the computers went wrong?
Do we know?
I don't know if it's been made public knowledge, because all that you hear on the news, and certainly all I've heard, is that it was a fault with one of their computers.
Yeah, but there was a low-level engineer working in India somewhere who pressed the wrong button, is one of the rumours that I heard. But it's just amazing, isn't it? It affected tens of thousands of accounts that people couldn't be paid, and it must have cost millions of pounds.
Oh, I'm sure, and I think even now the banks are still absolutely paying for what was ultimately a hideous mistake, really, really awful mistake, and I was one of the customers affected by it. I was never at any stage worried, was my information secure, because it was a separate issue. It wasn't anything to do with where the data is stored. It was to do with how much money is in one's account. And don't get me wrong, that's obviously pretty bad, but it was never a threat.
Well, when it also happened with LinkedIn, didn't it, where they were able to access that, or they'd had a problem with their computers. Do you remember that one?
I remember it very well, LinkedIn, because I'm on LinkedIn myself, and I was one of the users who was a little bit panic-stricken, thinking, okay, now all of a sudden, a password, which, let's face it, a lot of us do use the same password for a lot of different either websites or just general login passwords. We do use the same passwords because there's so many to remember.
I know, it's a
bad
thing.
How are we supposed to remember all of them? It's impossible.
What do you do? Do you have the same one for all of your access passes to your phone, computer, your details, or do you change them just a little bit?
I don't change them as often as I probably should do, but what I do have is variation on a theme.
Right.
And that is the best way around it. If you have to use the same password, that's fine to a certain extent, but don't do it in the same combination for every single password you need, because that is tempting fate. Because as soon as that password gets out there,
everything,
then suddenly everything's open to it. Whereas if you change it slightly, then you know you've only got a few passwords you need to change.
Okay, that's great information. If you're looking for information, passwords, access, maybe blocking inappropriate material from the children. Whatever your problem is, if you're trying to transfer data from one position to another, then Phil's your man. So in terms of virus, that's giving an idea. Is it a one-stop shop where people can go and find out, well, you can get this much, this little? Because I don't even know how much I need or how little, because some of it's free, some of it you pay for. It is a real maze out there, isn't it?
Well, I'm very pleased you mentioned some of it is free, Eddie, because the next question I get asked an awful lot is, how much is this going to cost me? This sounds very expensive to protect my computer in a digital fashion that I don't even understand what I'm paying for. Why am I paying this amount of money per annum, and what am I getting for it? It's very simple. Some virus programs are free, so you don't have to pay for it at all. Again, depends on the level of protection, but when you think that free virus programs, and I'm not talking about trial versions either, I'm actually right. talking about annual subscriptions that are free. Free virus programs are going to do one thing, and that is protect you against viruses. Now, with a virus program, that is what you want. So, really, do you have to pay for it at all?
Yeah.
No, probably not.
Probably not. Okay, Phil, let's go through some of these things. In terms of last time, let's check you out and see how well or badly you've done with the task. Last time you were in, we were talking about which is the best phone out there. I had heard it was the iPhone 4, but then they had problems, and then the iPhone 4S came out. Does that take over from Galaxy 2, or does the Galaxy 3, 3S now take top spot? Because when we walked out the last time, you probably didn't hear, one of the security guards downstairs showed me the Galaxy 3S and said, you don't know what you're talking about. This is the best phone on the market. Come on in. You make the decision.
Okay, I might have to eat a little piece of humble pie, because I've been doing some homework, and I will stress that that was a challenge for my parents to get me to do that when growing up. So you've achieved an impossible here. So well done that. But the S3 does appear to have more advantages and more tempting advantages. But I should point out, before I start going through them, the S3 is a brand new phone. The iPhone 4S is coming up to a year old. You would hope that somewhere along the line, that whichever is the newest phone was going to be the most impressive, or else what's the point? But let's have a quick look. The Galaxy S3 has considerably more memory. This is random access memory, also known as RAM, which people might be familiar with that term. I'll give you a brief understanding of what RAM is if you don't know what it is. RAM is the memory that is used for a running process. So in other words, when you have a program or an application open on your phone, your computer, wherever it is, whatever it is, that is what is used. That memory is allocated to running and operating that program. That's when you have too many programs open and it starts to slow down, it means the RAM is just being overused. So if you consider it as if you were in an office, I'm not talking with computers now, just a desk, a filing cabinet, think of it as a plain office. The size of the desk that you work on determines the amount of paperwork one can do on that desk.
Fine.
So the larger the desk, the larger the memory, the more paperwork you can have, the more applications you can have open. It really is as simple as that. The Samsung has 1 gigabyte of memory in comparison to the iPhone's 0.5 gigabyte. So it does have double the amount of memory that the iPhone 4S has. The screen was the next thing that
it's
certainly...
a big old phone, isn't it, the S?
It I've did got the strike S2. Me. It did strike me that the screen is considerably larger than the iPhone screen. Yeah. You've got a 4.8-inch screen on the Samsung and a 3.5-inch screen on the iPhone. There is a considerable difference there. To be precise, it's 37% bigger. Just to really show I've been doing my math homework.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You see, I have been listening. Also, the other advantage with the Samsung is that it has what's called a micro SD slot. Now, again, putting this into English, a micro SD slot is room for an expansion card, so you can extend the memory. You can have more internal, or technically external, storage on that phone, whereas the iPhone does not have anything like this.
Well, you can get it with a 64, can't you? The iPhone 4S. You can get it with a bigger memory. Certainly,
yes, sir. Yeah. You can get it with a bigger memory, but that's internal. Right. It's not. It's not expandable. It's not changeable.
No.
Is what I'm saying. You're stuck with it. If you have a 64 gigabyte iPhone, that is the amount of memory that you have, albeit internally, but that is it. With the Samsung, you have the option to change the memory card as and when they perhaps bring out larger memory cards, so you can increase the storage space on your Samsung phone. So there is definitely that as a plus point. The Samsung has a removable battery. One thing that has bugged so many iPhone users for such a long time, God. Myself included. I cannot stand how I'm not allowed to remove the battery in my phone, because that was a technical trick not so long ago. If the phone went peculiar, you took the battery out and you just carried on. And that was the way you did it. But now, it just doesn't happen like that. The iPhone has revolutionized this. You can't do that. You just have to reset the phone. The other thing as well that Samsung has over the iPhone is that it has the ability to play Flash websites. Now, again, another bugbear to iOS users is that Flash, at the moment, still is not compatible with iOS. To anyone who doesn't know what Flash is, Flash is a platform that a lot of websites, including YouTube, use.
Moving images.
Correct. Moving images on a website use Flash, and that is still not compatible with an iDevice. However, with a Samsung or Android, more importantly, Flash is absolutely available. Free satellite navigation software as well is another feature in
Samsung.
Well,
it talks to you. That's the thing that gives it. I mean, when you're following it on the iPhone, it's great, but it, you know, you do have to follow it, and you do have to do some work. With the Samsung, it actually, you know, and if you want to download it as an app, it's £34 or something. It actually speaks to you.
Indeed, and that is one advantage the Samsung has. But if you remember our conversation last time, Eddie, I did say that iOS 6, which will be the new software for Apple devices, will change that. You will have free navigation within an iPhone before long. However, we're looking at the here and now, and the here and now says that the Samsung has one up on that.
Well done. When's the 5 coming out?
I still don't know a release date, yes, I'm afraid, and I don't think there is one. But if there is, I guarantee I will let you know first.
Yeah, just let me ask you a question about Apple, because, you know, I've spoken to a lot of people about Apple, and Apple came to the fore because it gave you things that you didn't know that you needed or didn't know that you wanted. And actually now, you've gone past that stage, and it's just inventing things that are decoration that you don't really need and you don't really want. But they make it so easy for you now with the iPhone, with the iPad, and indeed with the MacBook Pro, which I've got. The iPad and the tablets is where we're going to go the next time you come in. I love my tablet. I love my iPad. But I'm not so sure, because a close friend of mine bought the Samsung to go with his and says it is truly magnificent. While Phil Parry says he bought the Sony because you can get your USB cable in there. And actually, that is what you really need, because they've made it so that you can't interface your iPad with anything. They don't want you to, do they?
No, it is true that Apple can be a little bit restricting like that. And I don't know whether it is a case of they do it on purpose or whether or not they feel that they give you everything you could possibly want. And therefore, why would you want to connect anything else to it? So I don't know. You could argue it both ways. I don't think it is just a money-grabbing exercise. I really refuse to believe that. I just think that iTechnology is in its own world. And therefore, to connect third-party devices to that world would be ruining the experience.
Okay.
That's what I believe.
Fine, and we'll accept that. Just finally, seeing as we're running out of time rapidly here, Samsung and Apple, you know, which we've talked about a lot, are in a massive fight at the minute. Can you give us a little of the background to that?
Well, I think it is fair to say that arguments between technology companies happen all the time. Yes. The ins and outs we will never know, because they will only ever let you know what they want you to know, if you see what I mean. So I'm afraid my knowledge is probably as good as yours on that front. And I think as far as any arguments goes, well, let's put it this way. Things are never going to change. Technology companies are never going to work harmoniously. They are rivals. They are in competition with each other. And as a result of it, of course, there's going to be disputes. You can't really help
Well,
it.
It seems that effectively, you know, the Apple have accused, haven't they, Samsung of plagiarism as regards kind of, you know, you've copied our thing, you've copied it and got exactly the same, and they are, and they have a lot of money, both of them, going to be spending an awful long time in court.
Of course they are.
Yep, and you know, good luck to them.
Do you think I could very quickly just maybe sing the praises of Apple just a little bit? Because I feel like I've attacked them
a little bit.
Just very quickly, I would say that a couple of plus points for the iPhone is that there are more applications available for the iPhone than there is for Android technology. Not much. 425,000 for the iPhone, 400,000 for Android. So there's not much in it, but it's still a little bit better. There is a dedicated camera button on the iPhone. There is not that on the Samsung. And as far as the internal memory is concerned, this is important. The internal memory does work in the iPhone's favor. The maximum is 64 gigabyte, whereas the maximum internal you get on the Samsung is 16 gig.
There you go. Phil, thank you very much. We'll do the tablets next time. Appreciate it. You are our technical man.